Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year, year and a half, and they've done great, great work. They're honest. They're upfront. They can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You can give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, episode number 99. We are on the brink, Tony, of triple digits. We are on the brink of syndication. We can get royalties forever with one more episode. We'll be like the Golden Girls or something like that, where we can go into pure syndication forever.
I always wanted to be B. Arthur, and those kickbacks as far as you know, getting the things going, that'll be good for us. I'll be set for life.
I always wanted to be B. Arthur.
It's either her or Betty White.
Okay, I'll be Rue McClellan.
You make a good one. You guys got similar cheekbones.
That may be the shortest we've ever gone to getting stupid. And I could take it out, but I'm not going to. I could take it out, but I'm not going to. Okay, episode number 99. Before we get into it, Ed, God, we're way into it right now, so I'm crying. I'm laughing so hard, I'm crying. Tony, I shameless plug for Kings of Their Court. I appreciate your friendship so much. I got some pre-orders of the book, and I sent it to you, and you got it, you said yesterday?
Yeah, I got it yesterday. I walked in, saw it, and I was, immediate smile on my face, opened it up, sat down, read probably 50 pages right away, and then came back to it. I couldn't put it down, read another 20 last night, and then I had a little bit of time before I mowed the yard this afternoon, so I sat down and read another 10, 15 pages, and I'll come back to it tonight before I watch the Chiefs and the Ravens. But Marty, I say this in all seriousness, you may have found a second career as an author. This is really, really good. I've, you know, did not understand all the ramifications of what you were writing about. And, you know, I obviously knew Hunter Salas, knew of Chucky Hepburn, but I'll be honest, I didn't really know some of the others. And you had a guy that went to Stanford, another one that walked on at Nebraska. I mean, you had some really, really good talent in the city of Omaha. What a great, great story. And then on top of that, I really liked how you laid the history of Omaha out there, along with what was going on with the George Floyd thing, COVID, all that stuff. But yeah, it's great. I highly recommend it and encourage any of your listeners on whichever podcast they're on, coaching staff or the others, to buy it. I think it's really, really well done.
Well, thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. I'm glad you've enjoyed it so far. And yeah, October 1st, it'll be available for everybody. So, Tony, I owe you, you know, a little bit more Arby's for that. But I know you're telling me the truth there. Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, you're not making any of it up, because that's what you told me out of the shoot when we started talking pre-roll here. So.
Yeah, and one of the things that people will find out about me is that, you know, I tell the truth. You might not always like what I say, but I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't try to, you know, brighten it up or anything to make it any better than what I actually believe it is. But I've really enjoyed this book. And like I said, I will probably read it in less than a week, and look forward to learning more about the situation and the times there in Omaha with these three talented teams.
Yeah. Well, I won't bring it up with you again until next week whenever we record. And if you get done with it before then, give me a holler and let me know what you think of it. Because, I mean, I told you a little bit about it, just, you know, a very skeleton view. So I'll be interested once you kind of read the whole thing from start to finish, what you think of the entire story.
Definitely look forward to doing that and sharing that with you.
Awesome. So episode number 99. Tony, I've got some numbers here. I've got some dudes. I've got some dudes here. I got eight dudes here.
Oh, wow.
How are you? So with the uniform number 99, I've got three footballers, one basketballer, and three baseball players.
Wow.
And a hockey.
I'm gonna go with the ones I think I'm good with. So Justin Smith, if I remember correctly, like a Bengals 49er D lineman, did he make it?
He did not make the cut. There were so many good 99s, I couldn't fit in there.
Okay. Eric Gagne for the Dodgers, was he 99?
He did not make the cut.
Man, your list is pretty hard here.
When
Let's
you hear
go.
The names, you'll be like, okay, I see why these guys didn't make the cut.
Wayne Gretzky.
Gretzky makes the cut.
A great one.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got one. Only eight more to go.
Seven more to go.
Like I said, seven. Math wasn't my strong suit. All right. So we've got Gretzky. Another 99.
One baseballer and one football player are still active.
Baseballer, football players. Let's go Dennis Rodman. I know that's basketball, but was he 99?
He was 91.
91, like I said. Crap.
Tony, you're going to kick yourself in the butt when I start going down this list.
Let's start the process.
Aaron Donald.
Ah, he retired. That's there. It's okay. Donald.
I thought he's still playing, isn't he? Or did he retire?
No, he retired.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he retired. Yep.
Okay. Warren Sapp.
Ah, mm-hmm. Coach was with Dion at Colorado. Yeah. You think the Huskers beat Colorado, Marty?
I think they do.
Okay, I would agree with that. Yep. I would agree with that.
J.J. Watt.
Oh, duh, yeah.
Yeah.
That one I'd kick myself in the butt on.
Okay, basketball, one basketballer, George Mikan.
There we go.
George Mikan. One current baseballer, Aaron Judge.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
I told you, you're going to kick yourself
another
in the
butt kick.
Yeah. One retired baseballer, Mitch Wild Thing Williams.
Oh, okay. I remember him from the World Series when Joe Carter hit the home run and won it off him.
Yep. And perhaps the most important name on this list, one fictional baseballer, from the 1989 Cleveland Indians, Rick Wild Thing Vaughn.
Vaughn, yeah, Charlie Sheen.
Yes, there you go. So
okay, yeah, those were good. Those were good. Man, I feel like a putz after that one.
It's all right, buddy. I still love you. So
not the first time.
Favorite coaching phrases. Tony, I love this idea. You bounce this one out here, and man, I've got easily probably 12 of them that I've got written down here for today. And as we go through it, I'll probably think of more that I used often. I kind of saw when you sent this, you know, these are phrases that I used as a coach, either with my team or program philosophy or whatever. That's kind of the way I interpreted it. Is that what you were kind of thinking?
Yeah, I just remember back in the day when I coached in Hudson, Iowa, and I'll be honest with you, it was probably the most fun I've ever had coaching was there. We just had a great group of kids, and we were trying to build that thing, and it went pretty quickly. And one of the things we always talked about, the only place that success comes before work is in the dictionary. And they ate that one up. And like I said, really, really quickly went from a program that struggled to win 10 games to, by the time those kids were juniors and seniors, they went undefeated in the regular season and made it to the semifinals of the state tournament.
One of my favorite ones, just overall as a coach, and I'll fully give credit to Doc Rivers for this, but once I heard it, I had it on every single one of my practice plans for the rest of my career, and that was, fight for your culture every day. FFYCE. And I just had it initialized on there. FFYCE. Yeah, fight for your culture every day. And that was just something that was on my practice plan every single day to remind me that culture, you know, and it's the truth. Because you look the other way with your culture. And you don't want to be the guy that is just micromanaging everything. But man, you got to keep your head on a swivel. You know this just as well as I do, Tony. You got to keep your head on a swivel. You have to be aware of any erosion that might be seeping into the program culturally, and you've got to put your finger in the dam ASAP. So, you know, before you do any X's and O's, before you do this or that, you've got to fight for that culture every day. And that was a big one for me.
Yeah, and I think it was John Gordon that said, where there's silence, negativity seeps in or fills in. And so, you know, like you said, it's one of those things you have to fight for that every day. Mm-hmm. Another one that was really meaningful to me and to teams that I've coached is the fact, respect everyone, fear no one. Mm-hmm. And that just kind of became our motto in terms of we were willing to play anybody, anywhere, at any time. And doesn't always mean we won every game, but at the same time, we loved stepping into those matchups against some of the highly ranked teams and just finding out where we measured. And so, you know, just go out there, compete, give them the respect they deserve, but don't be afraid of anybody.
And I think that there is no, I don't know if this is the right way to say it, Tony, but I guess I'll say it this way. There's no greater shame than to watch a program or players that consistently duck a challenge. Like, well, I'm afraid to lose, or we want to make sure we win X amount of games every year. Well, no, go out and compete, man. Don't, you know, respect everybody, but fear no one, and go out there and stick your nose into the fight on a daily basis. And I really like that one, Tony. I've seen that one. I think the first time I ever saw that, I think it was like Marquette women's basketball years and years ago, was the first time I saw that one. But I've always liked that one. That's a really good one. So, one of the things I would use with my players, something would happen in practice, and you know, maybe we got away with it. You know, this is kind of one of those situations where you get away with it, and I would say, hey, that's a short-term solution for a long-term problem. And we need to fix the long-term problem. You know, we didn't mentally show up, but we got away with it because the team that we played that night was not very good. But it was an ugly game. Well, hey, we were able to get away with it. That was a short-term solution. But, boy, we've got a long-term problem because this is the third time that this has happened this year, and we're only 12 games into the year, or something like that. You know, I'm just kind of randomly painting a scenario, but that's something that I would use. That was a phrase that I use quite often with my players, you know, to apply it to, hey, That's a band-aid on a bullet hole, to quote Taylor Swift. So we've had B. Arthur and Taylor Swift already in this podcast, and we're less than 15 minutes into it. So, but that's one that I used quite often as well, Tony.
Yeah, and it's amazing, you know, you feel like you get away with it. You can kind of flip the switch, and then at a very important time, it comes back and bites you. Mm-hmm. Steve Sarkisian, I think, was the one who coined the, you know, all gas, no brakes. And I like that one just from the standpoint of, you know, when you get in there, give it everything you have. Go, you know, if you're going to be wildly successful, you have to take some wild risk. And mm-hmm. so I think as you go in there, I really like that one a lot, just because, you know, you want to get in there and you want to let it rip and you want to see what you have. And so all gas, no brakes is one that I've used through the years too. And just, it fits our style of play. We want to play fast, want to be aggressive, want to press. And so that one has been good to us.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that as well. I like that as well. So, one of the best phrases that I came up with, and I can't even tell you, I probably made it up on the spot, Tony, but as soon as I said it, I recognized that it was a really, really positive one. Now, one of the biggest mistakes that we make as coaches is the post-game talk, especially when we lose and we're upset with our teams. And so one of the things – and I know that was a mistake I made early on in my career. I really did. And so one of the things that I came up with was, not talk very much after games. One of my pat phrases was, we're going to watch the video before we talk a lot about what happened here tonight. Whether it was a win, a loss, a great game, we felt like we played poorly, tried to stay with that. But the other thing I would tell my teams, and again, this worked really well for me, and I think it kept it the proper perspective, I would say, if we win, enjoy it until your head hits the pillow, and then tomorrow we got to get back to work. Or if we lost, let it bother you until your head hits the pillow, and then tomorrow we got to get up and we got to get back to work. And I think that really helped keep our teams fairly even keeled, to not get too high, too low. And obviously highs and lows are going to happen throughout the season. But we really beat that mantra into the heads of our players that, you know, regardless of what happens, too high, too low, win or lose, we're gonna live through this game until our head hits the pillow. And then we're going to move on.
In 1993, Counting Crows referred to Omaha as somewhere in Middle America. More people know Omaha as the home of Warren Buffett, the Union Pacific Railroad, and the College World Series. Athletically, Nebraska is known for its dominance in college and high school football and volleyball, while basketball has perennially been on the back burner. But for one season, in its largest city, basketball was king of the state. In a time of social and political turmoil in our country, three high school boys basketball teams from Omaha, Nebraska were ranked in the top 25 in the country, featuring some of the best talent that one city has ever produced anywhere in the country. Amongst these three teams were nine Division I basketball players, and all 15 starters from these three teams played collegiate athletics at various levels for at least two seasons. Kings of their court, three teams, one city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history begins with the chaotic ending of the 2020 state tournament as the whole world was shutting down due to the COVID-19 virus. Over the span of the next year, these players, coaches, and parents navigated their basketball futures while also, like the rest of the United States and the world, worked through COVID quarantines, the George Floyd murders and riots, the political turmoil of the 2020 presidential campaign, and much more. 1 year later, the destinies of these three teams would intertwine themselves for the final time at the 2021 Nebraska State Basketball Tournament, where the crescendo to this story occurred 365 days after it began, with some of the best high school basketball any state has ever seen. Kings of their court, three teams, one city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history is the story of highly driven individuals searching to achieve lifelong dreams and aspirations, both on and off the basketball floor, during a season that almost didn't happen. Kings of Their Court will be published on October the 1st, Tuesday, October the 1st. Kindle copies are $9.99. Paperback copies are $19.99. Copies are eligible to be pre-ordered today, so be sure to get on Amazon.com and pre-order your copy of Kings of Their Court.
I like that one because it's a long season. It's got some peaks and valleys in it. And if you get caught up in the highs and wear yourself out that way, or if you get, you know, you end up being kind of a casualty of the lows as well, it just takes energy out of you that that you don't need to waste at that time. Yeah. Another one that we talk a lot about is compete every day. And one of the things that we like to do when we do one-on-one drills, two-on-two, even in our scrimmages, is we like to make things where our quote-unquote two best players, depending upon position, go against each other in a one-on-one drill. Or we take two starters and go have them go against another two starters in a two-on-two drill. Or we break up into even teams and do some things there. But one of the things that's so very, very important is competing. And I think that's why, you know, to be honest with you, that multi-sport athletes are kind of like the backbone of high school athletics, because they learn how to compete, not just specialize in a sport. They learn how to compete in multiple sports.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the lifeblood of high school athletics.
And a lot of kids, you know, they're not going to be the star basketball player and the star volleyball player and the star softball player. Do they exist? Absolutely they do. But they're few and far between. If they're the star volleyball player, more than likely they're going to be kind of a role player for the basketball team or the softball team. And so when kids learn how to compete and to compete in different roles, man, that's such a huge thing, Tony. I mean, that makes your whole athletic program, top to bottom, from sport to sport, so much better.
100%. That was one of the things. I learned a lot of different things in Harlan, but from Mitch Osborne, that was one of the things that really stood out, was exactly that. How, you know, he encouraged those who maybe were a star football player but would be a role player in you know, basketball to come out, because of the fact, you know, it would get some of those basketball guys that might be stars to go out in football to support one another, but you get to learn how to compete in different roles. And I think, like you said, Marty, that's so very, very important in terms of like adding to their sport IQ and just learning to compete all the time rather than to be a specialist and, you know, take some of those months off.
Mm-hmm. Another one of my favorites, Tony, and if any of my former players would ever listen to this, they would be rolling their eyes. Control what you can control. I mean, that's all you can do as a coach, as a player. Even as a parent, you can't control when your kid's going to play or anything like that. So control what you can control. It's such a, you know, as coaches, what can we can control? We can control our effort. We can control our team's effort, how hard we practice, how organized we are. You know, the film that we watch, the those certain things. You know, and you emphasize to your players, hey, what can we control here? Our attitude, our effort, our camaraderie, you know, our defensive effort on most nights. Now, you can't necessarily control the offense a lot of nights because either the ball goes in or the ball doesn't. But you can control your rebounding, all those different things. So I think for any walk of life, for anybody, if you can control what you can control and focus on that and not worry about all the stuff that you can't control, I think that helps so much. In your focus and where you put your energy and where the energy of your program is going to be.
100%. You know, attitude and effort are the two things that you can control. And as long as those are where they need to be, you're going to put yourself in position to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that we talked about a lot is you get out of it what you put into it. And so that was something that, you know, we talk about with our players, is that, hey, you know, it's one of those things. If I say I want to be an Olympic swimmer and I go to the shallow end of the pool and I splash around, I'm not getting out of that. Like, I'm not going to, you're like, your work ethic doesn't match up with what your mouth is saying. And so want to make sure that we pour our heart and soul into it so we can get out of it what we put into it, which is hopefully 100% effort in, you know, the lessons and stuff that you get out of basketball. But that was one that we would emphasize with them quite often as well.
Yeah, you know, we would track, we would do our best to analytically track our kids' effort throughout what we called improvement season. You know, shots, free throws, open gym attendance, weight room attendance, all of those different things. And so if you have a kid that says, you know, they're a freshman and they say, hey, I want to be a JV starter and,
sit at the end of the bench for the varsity team, get a varsity uniform. Okay, that's great. And then at the end of the summer, they've only made half your open gyms. They've only shot 4,000 shots. You know, you're not doing that. You know, you're not putting in your mouth is saying one thing, your words are saying one thing, but your actions are saying something completely different. Completely different. And I really like that, Tony, because, you know, that's something you can come back with. Hey, Billy, you told me that you wanted to be a JV starter and a swing kid on varsity and get a varsity uniform, but you only put in 4,000 shots. You only made it to half of our open gyms. You only made it to half of our league games. And I, you know, there's no good reason why you missed as much time as you did. So I'm not saying that you can't make it, but boy, you've really hurt your chances. And I think that's a big part of that. Don't you think, buddy?
100%. You know, I was trying to remember who had the 10,000 hours. There's the law of the 10,000 hours where if you put 10,000 hours.
Malcolm Gladwell.
I want to say Malcolm Gladwell.
Yep.
But yeah, makes a whole lot of sense. And a lot of times people will get to that 9,500, 9,900, whatever, and they'll give up when they're just on the other, getting ready to get to the other side on a breakthrough.
Yep. I'm stealing this directly from the manager of the greatest baseball team ever assembled, Tony, the 2016 Chicago Cubs. Joe Madden, DSB. Do simple better.
Better.
Do simple better. As a coach, do simple better. As a player, do simple better. You know, coming off, and it's a great reminder when you work Snow Valley. Again, really, really lucky to work USA Gold Camp this past weekend. What are we doing? We're doing line drills. We're doing box drills. We're emphasizing playing off of 2 feet. We are doing simple better. And a lot of times we get caught up watching the, you know, certain guys or gals play, dribble it 52 times, step back three, you know, this type of thing. You know, no, just get behind the ball, get your shoulders forward, get on balance and get a good follow through off of a kick out or something along those lines. Just do simple better. And I know there were probably times, especially when I was a younger coach, I probably made things a little bit more complicated. I don't think overly complicated than it needed to be, but, you know, a little bit too complicated at times, very, you know, few and far between, but I know I did. And that was just something, especially after the Cubs went on that run, we're just going to do simple better. And boy, that really helped me simplify my philosophy as I move forward.
I also like Madden's one, try not to suck. I thought that was a good one too.
Or when you write a book, don't have it suck, you know? So. Sorry, that's the, everybody that I talked to about the book, that's the, you know, what did I ask you, Tony? Well, first question.
Did it suck?
Did it suck? You know, and that's my whole thing. So go ahead. Sorry, buddy.
No, I was just going to say, Kara Lawson had that viral clip last year about embracing the hard.
Yeah.
And I think that's another one, because that's what sport is the fact that you have to become comfortable being uncomfortable. And that is such a challenge because human nature, we want to stay in our comfort zone. But here's the thing, nothing grows there. And so you have to embrace the hard. You have to get out of your comfort zone. And I think that a lot of times is a huge thing for young athletes is to get pushed and go, you know, further than what they think they're capable of. They're probably about 60% of what they're able to do, but you got to get them out of that comfort zone to embrace the hard if they're going to get to that other area that they have the opportunity to.
Yep. What else you got, buddy?
You know, another one that I thought was a good one too, a big Nick Saban fan, obviously, trust the process. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things, there's going to be good days, you're going to make progress, you're going to be on top of the world, there's going to be bad days, and it's going to be really, really difficult, but you have to stay consistent and trust the process that what you're doing is going to work. You just have to stay faithful and consistent to it, and it will end up in the right place.
I really think, Tony, and this took me a while to learn, I became a much better coach when I quit worrying about winning and losing and only focused on the process. How did we play? Did we happen to win? Great. If we lost, crap. You know, but for the vast majority of the regular season, from November 15th till February 10th, just did we get better? What was our process? Hopefully we win. I want to win. Going to do all that I can to have us win, but focus on the process and trust the process. And it made me such a better coach when I started doing that.
And the guy that's all the rage right now in college football, the people that look is the one who's probably Mantua best college football coach that has been passed on from Saban, has gone to Kirby Smart, who's also a disciple of trust the process. But he said a lot of what you just said, Marty. He got quit getting wrapped up in the scoreboard. Did we get better? Did we improve? And that's so very, very key.
Yep. I think this is really important for coaches to remind themselves, and even players as well. What's your why? Why are you here? Mm-hmm. What's your purpose? There are times, and it's part of the job as coaches. We get burnt. We get tired. We get frustrated. You know, our teams get on our nerves. Guess what? We get on our players' nerves, and we should accept that. We shouldn't complain about that. It's just human nature. And so, why are you doing this? What are you doing? Why are you doing it? What's your why? And it kind of dove, you know, I'll kind of combine two of mine here with that. You know, are you finding joy? You know, in your why, the most important thing you can have is joy. And if it's not, if anything isn't bringing you joy, coaching, your full-time job, the food that you're eating, the car that you're driving, and I know that's a little bit more difficult because that costs a lot, but you know what I mean? You know, if it's not something that brings you joy, then why are you doing it, or why are you participating in it, and so forth? And again, not every day is joyful as a coach. I'm not saying that every day you need to be holding hands and singing Kumbaya, My Lord, but overall, it's got to be a joyful experience. And so what's your why, and finding that joy are so vitally, vitally important for any coach to really be as effective as they can be, and your players as well, because they shouldn't be there unless overall it is a joyful experience.
It's got to be joy in the journey, and those coaches that find that joy in the journey are usually the ones that are been around for a few decades.
Yep.
Another one I think is good is be present where your feet are.
Yep.
You know, a lot of times when we get them, it's right after school, and whether they had a terse conversation with that special someone, or they bombed a test, or whatever it may be, be present where your feet are. I need you here for the next 2 hours. And then after that, you can go back to worrying about your GPA and your love life and whatever else, but be present where your feet are. And so I think that's one that's a good reminder for athletes as well.
Yeah. It, when you are talking with somebody, are you giving them their full attention? Are you giving eye contact to this person? You know, are you completely locked in to what they're doing and being present where you are? And if you can't be, you got to fake it. If you can't be, you got to fake it. You got to, and, you know, coaches with inevitably, you're probably going to have a day or two of practice this year where your principal's on you, or you got this and that. And trust me, I've been there, done that. You know, your personal life, you have family issues, and you've just got to be present where you're at. And for that hour and a half to 2 hours, you got to do your best to just be present where you are. I think that's really important. So, PhD, got this from Rick Pitino, Tony. Poor, hungry, and driven. If you want to be successful at this, at anything, and we're talking about coaching here, you've got to act like you're poor, you got to act like you're hungry, and you got to be driven. You've got to put in the time, you've got to put in the energy. If you want to be good at it, and that was kind of, you know, like your competition one and a couple of the other ones that you brought up, you've got to want that spot. That spot is not given to you. If you want to be a great coach, you've got to be willing to put in the time. You've got to read the books. You've got to watch the film. You've got to network. It is massive effort, but you've got to have that drive. You've got to be PhD, poured, hungry, and driven, and you've got to have that same fire in the belly at 55 that you had at 25, and that's hard to maintain. I mean, I'm example number one of that, where you just, you know, especially, you know, 5-6 years, I just burnt out, just completely fried. I had given it all that I had at that point, and I needed to go away for a while. And, you know, so PhD is definitely a huge part of it.
And Patino's not a bad one to learn from, one of the best college coaches ever. Another one I thought was good, speaking of old college coaches, never give up. I think that's a good one. Jim Valvano, I think back to that SB speech that he gave. And, you know, I could listen to that every year before the season begins. And there's times in huddles, you know, hey, don't give up here. Keep pounding the rock, if you will. Keep swinging away. It's going to happen. And yep. So that's one that if you just keep fighting, you know, don't lose that competitive spirit, good things will happen.
Yeah, we had a deal my first year at Fort Calhoun. Again, one of the craziest games that I've ever been a part of. We were down 9 with less than 50 seconds left in the game, at least a minute, and I'm pretty sure it was under 50 seconds. And we didn't have the ball, and we won in regulation. To this day, I mean, I know how we did it, but at the same time, you know, it was crazy. But that those kids never gave up. They kept chipping away, and we hit a three that got us to within 6, and we call a timeout. And then we forced a quick turnover, and we got fouled, and we got a couple of points off of a free throw while the clock was stopped, you know. And so you just got to keep hammering away at that, you know. And so inevitably when you get in those situations, yeah, you just got to keep chipping away at it. You just got to keep hammering at it. So I've got 2 more left, Tony. I don't know how many more you've got.
I got 1.
Okay, so perfect. So I'll start with my second to last one here. One of the things that, you know, especially with our players and our young players, what if they struggle in this part of the game, it tends to affect almost everything else for most players. What is it, Tony?
If they struggle with this part of the game, like they're shooting, if they aren't making shots.
Yep, exactly. So when I sense that a player was allowing their shot to affect everything else with their game, one of the quick phrases that I would use was, hey, they're not all going in, but the next one is. And yep. That's the way you got to think. They're not all going in, but the next one is. And you've got to have that attitude as a coach of shooters, as an offensive coach. Yeah, not every shot's going to go in, but the next one is. And you know, and I, you know, stupid stuff I would say, you know, a kid would shoot a bad shot and they'd hang their head, they'd get the hound dog look. Look, come here. Look. Hey, look. You know what? I missed a shot once too. You know, it was 1986. So, you know, we thought the Russians were going to bomb us. It was a crazy time. And I missed a shot in 1986, but I recovered. You've got to recover. And usually that'll kind of put a little bit of a smile on their face and kind of take it. But you've got to have ways to communicate with your offensive players. If it's baseball, hey, you're not going to get a hit every at bat, but the next at bat, you're going to hit the ball hard and you're going to get a hit. You know, and those type of things, you got to have something that will pick up the confidence of your players in those situations when they're struggling with their own confidence. And that's one that I would often use.
The last one I would go with, and, you know, you take a look at like John Gordon's book, Coffee Bean, and different things like that, but it just gives you kind of an idea. Are you a fountain? Or are you a drain? Do you fill others up or do you pull it down because you're an energy vampire? Yeah. And you know, that's one of the things I think that's so very important with basketball being a longer season. If you have somebody every time they walk into the room and they kind of take the air out of it because, oh, here comes Eeyore again, yeah. It's hard. But yeah. If you come in, it's like, oh, the people gravitate to them because they're positive and they build each other up. That's the type of people you want to be around.
Yeah, we read the Energy Bus my first year at Fort Calhoun. And again, had nothing to do with those kids. It was just, I knew I was going to start off with that because one of the things I wanted to establish was no energy vampires. We want to bring as much positive energy as we can. And so I love that. You know, the energy vampire would be another one that I would throw on here. We don't want those. So last one I had, buddy, was culture, CBC. And that was another one I would put on my practice plan. Culture before chemistry is what that stood for. You got to try to build the best culture that you can to get as many of your players bought into the culture as you can. Now, logically, can you get every player bought in on every single thing that you do with your culture? Probably not. But can you, you know, you got to do your best to get the vast majority of them bought into your culture. And I really think that until everybody's speaking the same language, it's hard to have that
chemistry that you need to have in order to be successful as well. And so I think those building blocks are really, really applicable in that regard, that you've got to build that culture, then the chemistry will happen. And when the chemistry happens, then you're going to play better basketball at both ends of the floor. But you can't have that chemistry before you have the culture. And so that's one that I had that I used a lot.
And I think the Indiana Fever might be an example of that, Marty, just in terms of like Christy Size kind of got the culture, initially. They started off 1-8, kept plugging away, and now, you know, you look at them, they're 18-16, and that chemistry has happened because she got her culture in place. So I think that might be a little bit of an example of what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, if you are in the Omaha, Council Bluffs, Lincoln metropolitan areas and surrounding areas, it is that time of year again. It is time for the 2024 MBCA Fall Coaches Clinic Series. We're going to start this on Wednesday, September 18th. We're going to go 4 weeks in a row, September 18th, 25th, October the 2nd, and October the 9th. And we have got a great lineup of coaches. Drew Johnson, women's basketball coach at Nebraska Kearney. Marty Levinson, new men's basketball coach at Nebraska Kearney. Tim Sandquist, head men's basketball coach at Kirkwood Community College. Carrie Amy, the new women's basketball coach at the University of South Dakota. Mark Swoboda, from my alma mater, Briarcliff University, go Chargers, head men's basketball coach there. Coach Sabota is going to be down. Amy Williams, head women's basketball coach at the University of Nebraska, is going to be one of our guests. We've got a couple more slots to fill. So it is going to be a great series of clinics. It's going to be located at Legends Sports Bar here in Omaha, 72nd and Pacific Street, just east of 72nd Street there. And for those four clinics, $80 is going to cover your clinic fees, the beverages, the food, and the camaraderie, the networking, all of those different things you're going to have at the Metro Basketball Coaches Association Coaches Clinics here this fall series. It's going to be a great run of coaches, so I encourage you, get signed up today. If you want to get signed up, if you want more information, you can send an email to Tom Crable at mbcaomaha@gmail.com, and Tom will get back to you. He'll get you all the information that you need. So coaches, get signed up for this fall's run of coaches clinics for the Metro Basketball Coaches Association. Well, Tony, you know who has always had a great culture and valued culture before chemistry?
Europe.
The Europeans once again lead us in to the coaching staff trivia question. Mr. Viss, it is your turn to put up this week's coaching staff trivia question. What do you got for me?
I'm going to go in the WNBA because okay, they're getting towards the tail end of their season, getting ready for the playoffs and stuff like that. And we've seen a couple of rookies put their imprint all over. We've talked a lot about Caitlin Clark, not so much about Angel Reese. So my trivia question is related to her today. It's a two-parter.
Okay.
Because I knew you would want to answer both of these. So
I'll
Angel Reese this week became the set the record for the all-time most rebounds in a single season. I want to know who she passed to become the all-time single-season rebounder. And then also she became the all-time leader in a season for offensive rebounds. And I'd like to know who she passed in that one as well.
Boy. I'm just going to go with a really obvious one, but I'm guessing
like
it's probably wrong. Brittany Griner?
Close, but it is not Brittany Griner. Either one for either the total or the offensive.
Okay, so yeah, I was going for total rebounds. Not Brittany Griner. Lisa Leslie.
Another really good guess, but it's not Lisa Leslie either.
Boy. How about
Tina Charles.
Ooh, another good guess. The correct answer for total rebounds is Sylvia Fowles, set back in 2018.
Minnesota Lynx.
Yep. And then for offensive rebound, this young lady had actually committed to Iowa and then later on didn't end up going there and went elsewhere. Yolanda Griffiths in 2001. She had 162 offensive rebounds. Angel is at 165 with, I believe, six games left.
Yeah. And, yeah, hats off to her. I mean, it you know, she is not huge. I mean, she's not like a, you know, 6'7", 6'8", or whatever. You know, she's 6'2", 6'3", with her bangs curled. Yep. And you do have to respect her for her motor and her nose to go get to the basketball, at the very least. So, yeah, that was a good one, Tony. That was a very fair and balanced question. Easily, it could have been attained. I'm disappointed I didn't think of Sylvia Fowles. That one,
you're close.
That one is going to bother me until my head hits the pillow.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So
you are a perfectionist.
Well, I don't know about that, but you know what I like? That's perfectly prepared every time that I go there. Arby's, we have the meat. And we have one person here who will be able to afford a whole bunch of Arby's, at least for one season. Mr. Viss, do you have any idea who I selected for this week's Arby's winner?
Oh, yeah, Steph Curry.
Did okay. Pretty good little payday for Steph.
67 million is not bad.
Yeah, not bad, you know. 1 year, $62.6 million for Steph. Now, this is an extension. This isn't for next year. It's like 2 years from now, Tony? Something like that, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. So, yeah, not a bad gig for Mr. Curry here. I think they'll be able to get some curly fries with ranch with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe even a large.
Would you like to go large? Sure. Why not? So, well, Tony, it is also time for... And this week's TWIB stuff here, this week in basketball, you had mentioned it a little bit earlier, the Indiana Fever kind of turning around the culture, moving things in a positive direction, so much so that they are not only above 500, but they have qualified for the first time for the playoffs in 8 seasons. And if you'd have said that when they were 1-8, I think you would have been able to take a lot of people. I think a lot of people would have laughed in your face if you would have said 1-8, and before the season is over, they're going to be above 500. But, I know a lot of attention goes to Caitlin Clark, but they have really, really figured it out. And, everything is moving in the right direction for that franchise. And I think, in my opinion, and this is just completely unbiased, I know there's a lot of talk about rookie of the year and this and that, I think it's done and over. I think what Caitlin has done with the Fever, with the winning, she had another triple-double. It was either last night or the night before.
Last night. Yep. Almost had a quadruple-double. Just needed about 3 more turnovers.
I think the rookie of the year and the MVP are all done. There's no debate. And when it comes down to it, Caitlin's team has won almost twice as many games as Angel Reese's team has. And Angel's team didn't start in a 1-8 hole. I think it's been really, really impressive what they have done here.
Yeah, and you take a look at it, there's still a chance that they could end up in the fifth seed. They're 6 right now. They could jump up as high as 5. I think they have 6 games remaining. If I remember correctly, 5 of the 6 are at home.
Yeah.
And the one that's on the road is against the 7-26 LA Sparks, who in their last 10 are 1-9.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, they're 2.5 out of fifth. 3.5 out of 4. So that's it's a mountain to climb, but it's not impossible. But they would have to probably go 5-1 at least and then get a little help. But
3-6, you know, they're going to play Minnesota. Kind of, you know, everybody loves a storyline. You know, let's say Minnesota and Indiana get matched up. Cheryl Reeve and others leaving Caitlin off the Olympic team. And Caitlin, the last time they were in Minnesota, had choice words, per se, for Cheryl Reeve and everything there. You know, it would be a good storyline, to say the least, if they got matched up in the first round. And two teams that are playing really, really excellent basketball right now.
Yeah, I mean, I would say Caitlin probably is deserving of first team all WNBA. And another player that would be on there would be Nafisa Collier, from Minnesota, who in my opinion is probably the runner up for MVP to Asia Wilson. And so it would be a really, really good first round matchup there. And, you know, it would be something that would put some people in some seats. But I give Cheryl Reeve credit. You know, the last time when they did the Maya Moore jersey retirement, which, by the way, that's the only game the Fever have lost since the Olympic break. She said that she wished that, you know, she had either Maya or Caitlin on her team right now. So maybe she's trying to smooth that over a little bit. I don't know. That would be some must-see TV.
Well, it would be a terrific storyline if things settled in the way that things ended the way that it's set up here today. You've got the Liberty and the Aces looking at a semifinal matchup there, assuming they both win their first round series. But right, you know, and you know, the Aces, you know, they're still kind of, for them, they're still kind of scuttling a little bit, Tony. I mean, they've lost a couple of games that they normally would have won the last few years. And I know some injuries have some stuff to do that, but it is not a given that Las Vegas is going to beat Seattle in the first round if things stay the same way. I think that's going to be a really, really healthy first round series.
Yeah, with Seattle, you know, I think a lot of people, the Gabby Williams signing maybe has flown under the radar. But yeah, Las Vegas is definitely vulnerable. I think I'm not saying they're losing games on purpose, but kind of like we talked about last week, I think Las Vegas understands, hey, we've got some vets here.
Yeah.
We may lose these battles, but let's be healthy for the playoffs and try to win the war.
Yeah. Let's be ready for the war. Absolutely. So, coaches, by now you have seen the newest thing coming out of a pen and a napkin, the opening tip, Substack newsletter. I put an edition out there for free, and hopefully you see what a great investment this is going to be for you as a coach. I'm guessing it probably is, if you watch everything and listen to everything, it's going to take you almost 3 hours to get through everything on the opening tip newsletter here. What do we have in there? You've got an original article by myself here, just thoughts, ideas on different coaching topics. Into the Lab, that's probably my favorite thing, is the Into the Lab. It's me, another coach, and a whiteboard, and we're just drawing stuff up here. Stuff to help you out, to help you become better, and to help your team become better this coming season and beyond. Got another exclusive podcast. You heard the first one, Industriousness from the Wooden Pyramid of Success, and it's me and it's two semi-retired former girls basketball coaches, Matt Kern of York, Nebraska, Nate Wall of David City Aquinas here in Nebraska. And every newsletter, we're going to break down an aspect of Wooden's Pyramid of Success. Bookshelf recommendations from off the bookshelf, X's and O's stuff. I'm dropping in a university video. It's just going to be given to you there. You know, and I really believe in the products that I've put together. It's practical stuff that's going to help make you a better coach. And then we've got the Coach's Corner with links to clips and articles. As you saw, we had our two Olympic coaches, Steve Kerr and Cheryl Reeve. Just really, really good stuff here. And I know it's subscription-based, but goodness gracious sakes alive, as Coach Wooden would say, it is so affordable. $8 a month for two newsletters. That's $4 every newsletter. That's $2 every single week. Or you can get a year-long subscription, $75. That's 24 editions of the newsletter. That's basically $3 a newsletter. That's basically $1 an hour if it takes you about 3 hours to get through everything that you're getting here. It could not be more affordable. It could not be more positive for you. It's going to help make you a better coach. So subscribe to the Opening Tip newsletter
Folks, you're not going to regret it. Next up here on our list, Dawana Bonner, kind of sneaking up the all-time charts here, Tony. Hopefully you could read my chicken scratches when I sent this to you. She just the other night passed, oh crap, who did she pass? I can't remember who she passed, but she is now fourth all-time in the WNBA in scoring, and it is not it's not a stretch that she could end this season as the second leading scorer in WNBA history. Now, she'll probably never pass Taurasi, but you never say never. But man, she's just a really, really underrated career for Dawana Bonner. And still playing at a very, very high level. I think it's her 15th or 16th year. You know, a very important player for the, you know, right now, the probably the second best team in the league in Connecticut. You know, six of one, half a dozen of another. And playing a valuable role. And yeah, she just kind of keeps climbing those all-time ranks. I'm trying to think. Trying to think who she would be compared, but kind of like a Karl Malone, where it's just like just kind of kept doing the same thing year in, year out, year in, year out. Nothing too spectacular. Nothing, you know, no season where he averaged, you know, like Karl Malone never averaged 37 a game, but until his last year or two, he never averaged anything less than 20. 26, 27. It was always between 26 and 28 or 29 points a game, and kind of comparable in that regard. That you look at the all-time chart, you're like, holy cow, you know, that kind of came out of nowhere, so to speak, and she's just kind of kept clipping along here.
Yeah, I'm surprised that she's as high as fourth, and like you mentioned, with a chance to go as high as second for the end of the season. And you touched on probably three things I would describe her. Number one, she's underrated. Number two, she is consistent. Like, you are dependable. She's there each and every night for the Connecticut Sun. And then on top of that, longevity. Would you say this was year 15 for?
I just looked it up. It's 14. Year 14.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. And so those are the three things: underrated, consistent, and the fact that she is just her longevity. Those are the things that stand out about Dawana Bonner. And so congrats to her on a heck of a career.
Yeah. She is fourth. Tina Thompson is third. She's less than 100 points behind Tina Thompson. So she's averaging about 16 a game. So she'll come close to passing Tina Thompson. Probably not going to be able to pass Tina Charles because she's at 75-52. So that's a little bit too much. And I assume the WNBA is like every other league. They only count the regular season points towards this number. So probably going to be hard to catch Tina Charles, but if she comes back next year, which I don't see any reason why she wouldn't, she'll be, you know, within the first half dozen games, she'll pass Tina Charles for second all time. And then Taurasi is at about 10,500 and change there. So she's quite a bit away from there. But if Taurasi retires fairly soon, if Bonner continues to play well, you know, now she's 37 years old. I'm looking this up as well here. So, you know, Taurasi would be a stretch to catch. But man, what an underrated career, and hats off to Dawana Bonner for again, not just stuffing the stat sheet at the end of her career just to do it. She's leading the team in scoring, that is right now listed as second in the standings, you know, tied with Minnesota. But they have the tiebreaker over Minnesota here. So just a heck of a career for her, and she deserves her flowers.
Most definitely. Like you said, very underrated. And, you know, Tina Charles, it'll be interesting to see if she plays again next season, because she took, you know, she had some issues, I think took last year off. And so if she'll keep plugging away at it, but we're seeing this rookie class being ready to get the torch passed off to them and maybe take the WNBA into even higher ratings and play in different things there.
Yep. Last thing that I have, Tony, if you've got anything to add, by all means, do so. But Cooper Flagg signing a shoe deal with New Balance, even though he's going to Duke, which is, you know, one of the flagship programs of the Nike basketball family.
you know, it's pretty crazy, Tony, that it took forever for players to get signature shoes and shoe deals and stuff like that. And now we have, you know, guys that have not even played a college game getting paid an endorsement to endorse a shoe line and New Balance. You know, Kawhi Leonard, Jamal Murray, the Brink girl that played at Stanford, the she tore ACL. Yeah. Yep. You know, so they're trying to build their portfolio of clientele for their basketball shoe line. It's the new world we live in. NIL, kids are making money. Just pretty, you know, just a unique situation, kind of uncharted waters.
Yeah, you know, one of the things when you take a look at that whole thing is, I think it's good because for a lot of years, you know, universities and different ones grew very, very wealthy off the labor, off the backs of these college athletes. And now the college athletes are able to get some of that money that they deserve there. And so I think it's kind of neat, too, you know, where Cooper's kind of cutting his own, because the easy thing would have been to sign with Nike.
Yeah.
And he signs with New Balance, and you named off some of the other players that are also on the New Balance roster, so to speak, there as well. And so I just think that's kind of neat, because it adds to that sneaker war, if you will, a little bit, as Nike at one time was the underdog and knocked off Adidas. And mm-hmm. Who knows, maybe one day we'll be talking about New Balance being the king of the shoe game.
Even though when we were kids, if you wore New Balance, you were probably, you know, shunned, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but hey.
Converse cons, baby.
Yeah, times they are a-changing. So, great stuff. Tony, anything you want to add here to episode 99, whether it's TWIB or phrases, anything like that? I think it's important when we talk about the phrases, a consistent, and we've talked about it before, consistent vocabulary. Your kids know what those phrases mean, how they apply to your program. I think it's important that whatever you choose, and we shared some of our favorite ones, whatever you choose to use to build your program, to communicate with your players, parents, administration, your coaching staff, whatever they may be, have it be consistent, have a strong definition of what each one is, and this will help put your program in the best place possible.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going, Marty. And the thing I would go with, too, to kind of chime in there a little bit, you can't go with all of them. Like,
yeah.
You can't have 100 and some phrases. You're going to lose your guys or gals. And so I would probably encourage, you know, 10, 12, you know, and if you've got really intelligent team, maybe 15 to 20. But somewhere in that neighborhood, I wouldn't go crazy and have, you know, 30 to 50 to 100 phrases, because nobody's gonna know what you're talking about. But pick out the ones that you find to be the cornerstone of what you want and hammer that message home. But yes, they can be very, very helpful with helping to build your culture and for the players with that vocabulary, that vernacular, to know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Great stuff as always, my friend. Episode number 99. Who'd have thought, Tony, when I bounced this idea off of you a couple of summers ago, that we would be at this point? Did you think that?
No, I didn't know how long it would go, to be honest with you. I'm shocked that people want to listen to us talk for an hour, but just really pleased that we decided to do this. And, you know, the worst thing I thought was it gave me a chance to talk to you for about an hour each week. And so I've really enjoyed it. Hard to believe that we're 99 episodes in. Here's to the next 99.
Yeah, well, we've got episode number 100 next week. We are really looking forward to it. Our limited brain power will try to come up with something special for it, and we'll see what we could throw out there. But we appreciate all the support. It's been great, and hopefully we've been able to help coaches out who listen. And also, as you could tell from earlier, we don't take ourselves too seriously. You know, you need to take yourself seriously to a degree, but when you start taking yourself too seriously, that's probably when you run into some troubles and some issues. So it's been really good here, Tony. Episode number 99, favorite coaching phrases. Really have enjoyed it. Coaches, if you have any questions for Tony or I, you know how to get a hold of us. DM us on Twitter. Email me a pen and a napkin at gmail.com. For B. Arthur, this is Rue McClanahan signing off here. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hold our craft one day at a time.